Local author and world-renowned speaker Charlie Tremendous Jones said, "You'll be the same today as you'll be 5 years from now, except for two things, the people you meet and the books you read." The average person doesn't read a book a year. That must be why they're average. The Tremendous Life Books team invites you to find something that motivates you to be anything but average. Visit us today at our showroom on West Allen Street in Mechanicsburg or online at www.tremendouslifebooks.com.
Welcome to Conversations with Leaders on Tremendous Life Radio, providing some of today's most influential and inspiring leaders a platform to share their stories of growing up, what happened, and what they're doing today. Now, here's your host, Todd Weaver.
Welcome, everybody, to Tremendous Life Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Tonight's guest is Mr. David Long. David is a student of the game of business. He's a speaker, an author, CEO, and founder of My Employees. His latest book, Built to Lead, is available now. David, welcome to Tremendous Life Radio.
Thank you, Todd. I'm happy to be with you.
We're super happy to have you, too. It's been exciting. We had to postpone a couple times, and I've just really been looking forward to having you and learning all about you. Let's start right away. Tell us about... This always kind of flips out my guess, but kind of tell us about like some of your earliest memories as growing up and kind of what was going on inside of you.
Well, that's a good question. My father passed away about 2 years ago this month, actually. He was a Baptist pastor for 55 years. So I grew up being a PK, a preacher's kid. So, yeah. You know, I'm the oldest of six children, five sons, one daughter. And, you know, kind of as a preacher's kid, you kind of got stuck up in front of the crowd, the auditorium all the time in the church. So you're in the choir, you're doing all kinds of taking offering, you're doing all kinds of things. So, I mean, it was teaching Sunday school, that kind of thing. So, I mean, it was good. It was good training. It's, you know, real world training where you get a lot of public speaking involved, and you get out there and you're in front of people, so everything you do gets scrutinized, especially when you're a preacher's kid, because they say you live in a glass house, and that is definitely true. My father is the greatest inspiration in my life, greatest influence, and he's taught me many things. Gracious sakes, you know where to begin on that, but he's, you know, my sister Paula really gave a great eulogy, if you will, the other day. She, in the second anniversary of Dad's death, she was talking about what our dad meant to us and everything, and she did a great job. It was just very, very touching. But, yeah, he's gone, but his legacy lives on in us.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting, David. And everything, it always, you know, it just really always interests us, you know, different people and how they were shaped or how they see they were shaped, you know, always with grace being able to look back. Like, I didn't know you were the oldest of six. So Do you think that kind of – and we'll get to this later, but do you think that kind of unwittingly played a role in your leadership abilities maybe very early on?
Yeah, without question. Another thing in the leadership aspect is I like to win. You know, you're competitive. My dad was competitive. My dad was at one time the champion in the Army in boxing. So, I mean, he was a middleweight. But in one night, he beat the middleweight and the heavyweight. The heavyweight and the middleweight were best friends. Dad beat the middleweight to take the championship from him. And then a non-sanctioned fight, Dad beat the heavyweight the same night. So, I mean, that was saying my dad was a scrapper. You know, my grandfather was a heavy drinker, you know, and it was one of those situations. And he was kind of abusive and really was tough for my father, who was also the oldest of six children. And my dad, basically, when he was like 14 years of age, he said about 14 to 15, when my grandfather, by the way, who was a professional fighter, he beat P.W. Armstrong, who was the world champion at that time. And he beat him in a non-sanctioned fight. But my grandfather was immensely strong. He actually used to get drinking money by turning over cars. He would take bets in the bar. And his friends would get everybody, they'd go to a new bar in another town, and they'd bet that my grandfather could turn over such and such a car. And they were all, no way. And, you know, he'd go out and do it. So they got their drinks for free. But, I mean, it was a sad situation. But my dad grew up in that environment. And, it was really tough. But my dad was tough. I mean, he was a, you know, he'd gone through a lot in his lifetime. But, you know, he could handle my grandfather when he was drunk, when he was about, my dad was about 14 or 15.
Wow, that's
and, it was tough.
It sounds.
Some people are brought up, some people are drug up, Todd.
Yep.
So that was tough.
Yeah, well, and you heard those stories, I'm sure. I don't know if you saw a lot of that going on. So, you know, your father being a preacher. Hey, by the way, that would kind of be a tough bout if you were boxing a preacher. You might have to, like, I don't know. I guess
my dad put that out of your mind.
It's
funny you say that because there was one time where I forgot, it was some rowdy guy challenged my dad one time, and the guy – I don't think he knew my dad used to be a fighter. And my dad had to really just hold himself back. You know, this guy was just in his face. And it was by the grace of God that my dad didn't kill the guy. My dad could have taken him easy, I assure you.
Oh, man.
That was so funny because I'll tell you this real fast. When I was 15 years old, we lived in Illinois. My dad had a church there in Moroa outside of Decatur, Illinois. And I remember my dad bought these one-pound boxing gloves. He bought them for Christmas. And it was so funny because he bought the first ones and they were too small to fit his hand, but they were our Christmas present, my brother and I. And he took them back and got bigger ones to fit his hand. So he taught us how to box.
Yeah.
And I remember we cleared all the furniture. It was wintertime, you know, Christmas time, you know. So and it was snow on the ground, so we moved all the furniture out of the front room. And my dad, we started sparring. I was the first one to fight him. And, man, I was doing pretty good, you know. I got a feeling my oats. I'm 15 years old then, you know. So, and I tagged my dad, and boy, he got hot. And then I could see he was coming after me, so I got it. I got away from him, and he got pushed me. He took his left hand and pushed me back in the corner. He started wailing on me, and he hit me in the stomach. I dropped to my knees, and he came across with a right cross, and he hit my head. It hit the doorknob, and I remember it went ding. You know, so it was like, and it was, and I was seeing stars, buddy. But anyway, that was fun. But it was an experience I'll never forget, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and it's cool listening to that. You're like almost reliving it. I can hear the joy, you know,
all
those times.
I am reliving. I'm doing the punching and everything.
Yeah, that's cool. That is. That's really neat. Now, you know, as a young man in a preacher's household, you know, growing up, the oldest, how were you with yourself, say, like in those adolescent years? I mean, were you okay with the girls? Were you confident in yourself? Or were you an introvert? Take us through some of that, please.
No, I was an athlete. You know, coming my father being an athlete, my dad was a great basketball player as well, and you know, he used to show us all his newspaper clippings. You know, from Morehead City, North Carolina, and you know, he had all those even in his latter years. And, you know, so I mean, we were all competitive. All of us were pretty good athletes, and so that was, you know, if we went to a different church after a few years, that was the good thing about being an athlete is that you were automatically accepted pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Into a new school, and so that really was good, and it built you for sure, and it helped you be able to make friends quickly, mm-hmm. and you know, as they say, you never meet a stranger, so I like that.
Yeah, well, thank you for that, David. And then let's see, what did you have an early dream? Did you want to be like a cowboy or a ranger or what did you want to be? I'm very serious when I ask that. You know, some people had an early, some didn't, you know.
Yeah, that was what I'm about to tell you really was an impactful thing for me. And my life became almost like a ship without a rudder. When I was younger, I had a dream about being a preacher, and I told my dad that. And, you know, I thought that's what I was going to be. I went up to 3 years of Bible college, and in the third year, actually it started bothering me a little bit in the second year, and in the third year I remember Todd, I was dreading going home for Christmas because I wanted to talk to my dad about it. I said, you know, I wanted to say, I don't know that I'm meant to be in the ministry. So I build this massive thing up in my mind, is it's going to be terrible, I'm going to have this long dissertation about how I'm throwing my life away. I get back home, and I pulled my dad aside after all the, you know, the hugs and everything, and a few hours had gone by, and I said, Dad, I need to talk to you about something. And he said, what is it? I said, Dad, I don't know that I'm meant to be a preacher. And he said, well, son, do you have a burning desire to preach the gospel? And I said, well, no, Dad, I don't. He said, well, don't be a preacher then. And I was like, that's it? I'm expecting this. Yeah. Really? That's all you got? You know, kind of deal. And he goes, yeah. He says, son, I, you know, I love you. I would have liked you to be a pastor and work in the church with me and do, you know, build the ministry together. He said, but I want you to be happy. You're my son. I love you. I said, wow, Dad, I don't know what to say. And it was, you know, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. And so that was tough, you know, but then that's when I got into retail and various things and took off in leadership and did very well. So that's really where it started for me.
You know, and thank you for that, David. I wanted to ask you that while you were, explaining that little episode there. What, you know, when you were driving there rehearsing this conversation with your dad, did you, didn't really have a plan B, huh?
No, I did not. And so here was what my plan B was. I, on the way back from Carolina Beach, North Carolina, which is where my folks lived at the time, my in-laws lived in Asheville, and college was out in Missouri where I was going to Bible college out there. Preacher's kids got tuition free, so that was a nice little plug. And so I basically, on the way back to Missouri, I stopped in Charlotte where one of my best friends lived. And I said, what's the nicest jewelry store? Because I had worked in jewelry when I was in high school and in college. That's how I helped pay for school. And I said, what's the nicest jewelry store in Charlotte where you are? And he said, that'd be Garibaldi and Brun. So I went and put an application in. And, of course, it was at Christmas time. So they already had all their people, and Christmas was over. You know, I was at home on Christmas Day, so this was the last week of Christmas. And I'm headed back out to school. I filled out the application, and they didn't make a big deal about it. I get back out to Missouri, and a few months later, I get this call from a guy named Bob Foster. And he said, yeah, I got your application here. You know, I'm the new manager here, and I'd really like you to come in for an interview. I'm going, like, I'm in Missouri. I'm in school. I was going to try to finish that third year. I went on to finish later and got a master's later, but it wasn't for the piece of paper. I could care less about that. It was just for the knowledge. But basically, when he called me, I really wasn't happy anyway, right? So it was like, well, I'm not going to be a preacher, and changing major, I'm going to have to be another 2.5 years instead of a year and a half kind of deal. So anyway, so he said, I'd like to interview. And I said, well, you know, I'm not coming back. I can't do that. So he said, okay. So then a few more weeks go by, and he calls me up. He says, look, I talked with Bill Kingoff in Wilmington, North Carolina, who was your boss there. And I talked to the Hales brothers in Greenville, South Carolina, and they were your bosses there at Hales Jewelers. And I want to hire you sight unseen, just based on what those guys said about you. I said, wow. And I said, that's pretty awesome. I said, but I really don't have any money to move there and everything else. He said, no problem. So he sent me the money to move. So we moved back to Charlotte, and I dropped out of school because I wasn't happy. I was miserable. Mm-hmm. And why would, you know, some people would say, well, go ahead and finish. Well, I'm going to finish in something I'm not even going to be doing. So it's just like, that's where I started my career. And I got into retail management and went on to be, great day. I went on to be one of the top 7 managers out of 1,200 on the East Coast in a retail chain. So that's pretty good. And
That's a great story, David. I mean, that's a great story. How old were you when that happened, sight unseen? How old were you?
I was 21 years old.
I mean, that had to kind of help your self-value, or unless you went crazy with it and, like, strutting around. But that had to kind of reinforce.
No, definitely not.
That had to reinforce, you know, your value sight unseen. And you made a good point there. Well, you made lots of them. But, you know, to have enough, I don't know, in tune with your disturbance going on there, that knowing that continuing school wasn't really what, you know, I mean, I say that because being disturbed is kind of a good thing lots of times. I think it kind of, you know, it sounds like in your example there, it kind of pushed you in a different direction.
It did. And there's nothing, you know, against the state of Missouri, but when I was there, I called it the state of misery. I just wasn't happy.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and
thing that he called me. And that was that was the Lord's direction. That was divine providence.
Yeah.
Because me back, and then, you know, I loved it.
Again, yeah, a lot of people would stay there and debate all that. And I don't know if there's a right or a wrong, but, you know, because your father wanted you to, or our perceived notion that what are they going to say? My family's going to be let down. All those other things, instead of really being in tune with their own inner voice. So I think that's really cool. I mean, I'm glad. Maybe if things didn't work out real good, we'd have a different story. But, you know,
that we would indeed. That's right.
Yeah. So now you move back to the East Coast. You're working in jewelry and retail. You're managing. You're moving up. You're learning a lot of things. Were you at this time at all? Did you know the value of reading books and hanging out with other like-minded people, or was that, again, were you kind of like an unguided?
Oh, Absolutely. Actually, you know, I missed this part, I guess, when I was 14 years old. My father, of course, you know, we grew up reading the Bible, of course, the number one book. But my father handed me, when I was about 14 years old, he said, "Son," he said, "I know you're pretty popular in school." He said, "But you can be more popular if you read this book." I said, "What is it?" He says, "Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People." And the very next book he gave me was Life is Tremendous by Charles Tremendous Jones. So I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
You know, of course, I spoke at Lancaster Bible College and got to take out Tracy and Gloria to dinner.
Oh,
and
nice.
Is it Jason, I think, or Jason that works?
Uh-huh.
I thought so. I thought it was his name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Real sweet people. And I took them out for dinner that night after I spoke.
That's a small world, you know, David. We were over not too long ago, a couple months ago. Tracy's, she's been a dear friend to us and a good power of example.
Sure.
You know, the nut doesn't fall far from the tree. You know what I mean? Like,
no, definitely not.
Yeah, she's been a really good example, a real good power of example for me personally and the people that we know. So that's cool. I didn't know that either about
you.
So, yeah. Uh-huh. All right. So now you're working your way. You're reading those books. You know, is there a catalyst or a turning point? Can you really identify one where you knew where you were going? I mean, and you just dug in and went there. I mean, I don't know if that question makes sense exactly, but I think you know what I'm asking.
Yeah, I could probably tell you, you know, after I had reached that number, well, not number seven, they never told us what number we were in, but it was the top seven out of over 1,200 managers. And I actually had done quite well, so I had been audited several times, not an issue. Wanted to make sure everything was above board. Well, when at that point, when I got to be, how I found out I was one of the top seven, is I was chosen out of all those people for the next district manager interviews. And when they came, they asked me some questions they never asked me before. And one of them was, "Are there any company policies that you disagree with?" And I remember when he asked me that, I almost hesitated for a second, and I said, "Well, this particular policy I don't agree with." And he goes, and he was like in surprise. He said, "Well, why not?" I said, "I don't think it's right." And it had to do with splitting commissions and type things like that. And then the next question was, "Well, have you broken that policy?" And, you know, you have that momentary little pause where you're like, is he going to burn me if I say yes? Or, you know, it's kind of like where you think for a second.
Yeah.
You know, am I going to, you know, you want to always do the right thing, but it was like, this looks like this could be a downside if I say that. So anyway, I said, "Yeah," he said, "Oh my goodness, David, this is the hardest phone call I've had to make in 22 years with the company." I'm going, "What?" And he said, "Yeah," he says, this is a firing offense. I go like, good gracious. So, you know, I thought, surely not. So he dials up the divisional vice president for the company. And he talks to him for a second, and I remember his name was Paul, was the regional security guy, and Paul said, "I'm here with David Long, and he's made a mistake. He's done he's broken a company policy on this commission thing." So he hands the phone to me, and I remember the guy gets on the phone with me. He cussed me out, and he said, "GD, David," he says, "you're one of my superstars. What the blanky blank do you think you're doing?" And I'm like, "Wow." I said, "I really didn't think it was that. Nobody cares what you think. You know, and nobody gives a blankety blank what your opinion is." And all this. Hmm. And he said, "That was stupid, son." And then he says, "Hand the phone back." So I hand the phone back. And then I hear Paul say, "You know, you sure, sir? He's one of our best," and this kind of stuff, you know. And he hangs up the phone and he says, "Hand me your keys." I'm going, "My keys? Are you kidding?" I'm expecting this little, you know, slap on the wrist kind of deal. And he, "My keys?" You know, and I sat there. And I'm not kidding you, buddy. I cried, Todd.
Yeah.
You know, here I was 20, let's see, at that time I was 28 years old. Not quite 28. I was 27 something. And to make a long story short, I hated everything I did after that. I was a company man. I worked 60 hours at least. And, you know, I was very successful in grooming other people to run businesses like I had done. And that's why they were talking to me in the first place. And in this particular district, when the new people would come in, a lot of them wanted to be in my store because I had the reputation for getting them in, getting them trained, and getting them out there being successful. So they wanted to work with me. And I wanted to work with them, too. I wanted the sharp ones. So when that happened, buddy, I was once again, for the second time in my life, a ship without a rudder. I did not really know what was going on. And over the next 3.5 years, from 1986 to the almost mid 89, I had 7 jobs in 3.5 years. And Todd, I hated everything I did. I mean, I was miserable. And I mean this, is I basically sold my house. The first year was fine because I had a bunch of savings. But after the first year, it was desperation. I had a job working with AT&T, and this was in a program they had back then called Appleseed, and it was trying to save the phone centers. It was a futile attempt. But they were paying me what they called temporary full-time. And, of course, they were unionized, but still are. But they were paying me $1,000 a month, which was a joke. And I was bringing home $818, but my house payment alone was $843. See the problem there, Todd? You little run
I got it. I'm following.
You don't even have enough money. Yeah, you don't even have enough money to pay your house. And believe it or not, my wife and 3 kids wanted to eat too. So you know, it was a disaster. And but again, in my life, it was divine providence because the good Lord had to get me where I had no other option but to look up. And I went through those seven jobs in 3.5 years. 2 of those jobs, by the way, were year-long jobs, including the AT&T one. And so do the math. That's 5 jobs in a year and a half. So I was miserable. If I had not had a wife and 3 children, I probably would have killed myself. And believe me, I'm not saying that bragging. I'm just saying how desperate I was and how miserable I was in my life at that time. And I remember, Todd, my father called me. Once again, I tell you why my father is the inspiration of my life, just like Charlie was for Tracy. My father called me in around April of 1988, and he said, "Son," he says, your mother and I have been talking, and we know you've been struggling, and we want to offer you the opportunity to move back home with us and start over again." And I thought, I'll never forget how I said it, because it was hurtful, it was sarcastic, and this is what I said, just like this. I said, "Yeah, right, Dad." And I said, "No way." And, man, my dad said, "Okay, son, well, I just wanted to let you know." And anyway, make a long story short, another year goes by. My father calls me in April of 89, and he said, "Son," and in the meantime, that year we had sold our house 2 weeks before we lost it in foreclosure, and I'd lost, you know, everything. And my father calls me, and he says, "Son, that offer still stands." And I said, "You know, you want to come?" And I said, "Yeah, Dad, I don't really have an option. I don't have the rent for the apartment." So I put my tail between my legs. I told my wife. She cried for about 4 hours. And, you know, and I said, "Honey," I said, "do you want," my wife, Janet, and I said, "Honey," I said, "do you want to go up and stay at your dad's house for a little while and just take a break, and I'll take the kids down to the beach with me?" She said, no, "I want to keep the family together." And I said, "Okay." So we moved down there, and one of the jobs I had of those 7 years was at Circuit City. And while I was there at Christmas time, you know, I had engraved jewelry. That's what I did, as I mentioned earlier, in high school and college. That's how I paid for my school. And while I'm at Circuit City, I looked up on the wall, and they had plaques. And I had catalogs from different suppliers and everything. And I asked the guy, Don, was the operations manager. I said, "Don, what do you pay for these?" He told me. I said, "Holy cow." I said, "Would it be okay if I make some samples and let you see what I can do?" And he said, "Yeah, I guess, you know, whatever." So I did. I brought him in. He goes, "Wow, these are a lot nicer than what we have. How much will you charge me for these?" I said, "Well, I'm going to," he said, "will you give me the same prices? I'm going to do better than that. I'm going to save you about 30%. He said, "Let's do it." So I sold him, and then I immediately went over to the 2 other Circuit City stores in Charlotte at the time, sold both of them. They loved it too. But that wasn't enough. That was like in January. So a few months later, that wasn't enough to stop the bleeding. I was looking for a job. I wasn't happy. And everything I tried to sell in Charlotte, except for the Circuit Cities, the door was shut in my face. And I'm here to tell you, I can sell. I've always excelled in sales wherever I was. But to go out and have the door shut in my face repeatedly, not interested, not interested, not interested. And so that's when the time came. And my father and mother offered, we went home. So we moved home to Carolina Beach, North Carolina, which is south of Wilmington, which is where I live now. And I moved in with my parents, put all our stuff in storage. in a 1,340 square foot house. Oh, and my baby brother still lived at home. He's 16 years younger than I am, my brother Jess. So he was still home. So we had eight people in 1,340 square feet. So that's kind of jammed, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, pretty good.
So that's basically, I had those samples that I made for Circuit City in my trunk of my car, and I didn't even really realize it. They were in there. I actually was in town. I was interviewing with a company called Reed's Jewelers. They were going to pay me $24,000. I had to go through five interviews over 2.5 months. So they drugged me out, and nobody else was hiring. I'm telling you, it was bad. So finally, when I was in Wilmington, and they told me, they said, Dave said, I called up. I said, what's the story? You know, you guys going to hire me or not? They said, well, we want you, Dave, but, you know, we've had so many people apply for the job. We're not going to pay you 24. We're going to drop it to 17, and you'll have to move to Colonial Heights, Virginia, or Birmingham, Alabama. And I says, I can't afford to do that. So I said no. And on the way home, and this is, without a doubt, it wasn't an audible voice that said it to me, but it impressed upon my heart like nothing else in my life, is I had this, and I happened to see the plaques in the back of my car while I was in Wilmington. I forgot they were back there. And on the way home, I had on boat shoes, shorts, and a polo shirt, not dressed for success, as you might imagine. So on the way home, I see this real estate office. I'd never been in a real estate office to try to sell anything, really. So I felt compelled, if you will, to go into that real estate office. So I took the plaques out. I went upstairs, and I remember the lady's name was Ruby. She's a real sweetheart. And I said, Ruby, I said, who would be the person I would need to speak to about agent recognition here for your agency? And she said, well, that would be Chuck Spooner. And she said, he's in a meeting right now. Can you sit down? And I said, okay. So I'm sitting there, and I realized, oh, my goodness, I don't know what I'm going to charge for these plaques. I was only trying to beat the Circuit City price. So with all my retail experience, I sat there, and I figured out, well, let's get a good price point. So I said, okay, $199, do 12 little plaques and one big plaque and all the plates and everything. I'll do that for $199.95. So I get in to see Chuck finally. Actually, I forgot to tell you. I said, can I borrow your calculator? So I'm sitting there, and I borrowed Ruby's calculator to figure out the prices and everything. So I got in to see Chuck, and I told Chuck, I said, this is what we can do. He says, I really like these. And he said, but I got a problem. And I thought to myself, yeah, that's all I need, more rejection. Mm-hmm. And he said, we recognize two agents a month. And I said, two, that's not a problem. We can do that. And I told him it was, $16.65 for one program a month. And he said, what will you do for two? And I said, how about 30? He said, well, 25 sounds awfully nice. And I said, $27.50, sold. And he said, all right. We laughed, you know, and he said, let's split the difference. So I said, okay, you know, I'm just starting out here. I said, but you can call these three Circuit City stores in Charlotte, and they'll tell you I'm taking care of them, even though I'm not living there anymore. And I said, would it be possible to get half the money up front to pay for the products and get it engraved and bring it to you? He says, well, you got an honest face. He said, tell me what the total is. I said, can I borrow your calculator? So I borrowed his calculator and figured out the price and tax and everything. And it was $346. And Todd, I walked out of there. I walked down to my car, and I'm putting the plaques in the back. And I said, thank you, God, and what a country. Mm. And I went home. I told my mom, my dad, and my wife, and all, like, they gave you the money up front? And I said, yeah. So the next day I put on a suit, and I went back up there, and two blocks from that real estate agency, ERA Strand, was Century 21 David Swire, who's still a client today here 26 years later. Mm. And I walked out with another check for $346.50, and I never looked back.
Nice.
Last year we did $9 million, and we're projecting, great day right now, we're projecting 11, almost 12 million this year.
Oh, man, that's a great story, David. And, telling your story, I mean, you've written it and you spoke about it, but I hope you're getting some value, you know, of sharing it again, because I can't help but to believe that it brings up, like, when you were living it, when you were telling me the story about boxing with your dad, you know, like – how everything falls in place, the universe is aligned just right, God, however, you know, all those words, whatever it is.
Sure.
If you wanted to move back there, if you wanted to swallow your pride or whatever those words are, you know, or being beaten into submission or whatever it took, you know, to get you there, and then you could move on from there. It's like so cool listening to that. I love this, you know, that's why I love listening to people's stories. So now, you know, you didn't, I mean, that day, I'm sure you knew that you were moving in the right direction. You had no idea, really, or did you have an idea? Were you on fire at that point, or were there some other stumbling blocks? Or take us through some more of that, what happened? Because I want to get to the book, you know. But what happened after that? Did you have any idea that that's what you were going to start focusing on?
As soon as I walked out of there 2 days in a row with checks, that's my focus.
Yeah,
you know, I finally found a way I could make money and do a good job for people and help them. And I love it because, you know, my business is recognizing winners. You know, I used to have a little slogan I told people, we only deal with winners in our company. Losers don't get plaques, and, you know, they don't get awards. So, I mean, that's what I love it. I love recognizing people doing their best. And I remember I won 14 Manager of the Month plaques when I was that retail manager with that one company. And out of, like, it was, I think it, at one point it was 42 stores, and it later dropped to like 35. But I had two different times I won back to back out of all those different managers. I was that much of a dominant player in that area in Charlotte. So, you know, I love winning, and that's one of the things I love my business, because I get to celebrate people. You know, this very day we had our Employee of the Month celebration. Today we have 49 employees getting ready to hire 5 or 6 more. We're growing. We're up 42% for this year so far. And we're just great day. We're just doing phenomenally well. We have a 20,000 square foot office building, completely paid for, by the way. I don't know a dime on it, on 16 acres. And we're getting ready to build, it looks like, another 33,000 square feet. So, you know, that's we're more than doubling the size of the company. But, you know, and that's, I love it. I love my people. I've got phenomenal people, world class. I take off, my wife and I are taking off this year. We're taking off 25 weeks, which is the most we've ever taken off. We've taken off 22, I think 24 one year, but this year we're taking off 25 weeks of vacation. And we're going to go to Scotland for 2 weeks. So, I mean, we're going to, you know, because I have a team, and I built my team, and that's what I talk about in my book. That's Built to Lead, my book. That's, I show people how to set up a company like I've done, how to pick winners. And, you know, you hire, you train, you prune, and you repeat until you get all world-class people.
Yeah, well, hey, help me with this. And I don't know how much of this it pained you, or what kind of challenges you had through editors and so forth. But, I mean, you don't really mince a lot of words in the book, David. You know, you talk about things that, you know, maybe some preacher's sons wouldn't talk about. Deadbeats, I believe, is one. You said the word loser.
Yeah.
You know that it seems a little harsh, but I mean, your whole book is based on your own experience, so it's not really theory; it's fact in your life, and it's a fact of your success. Correct?
That's correct. And you know, I actually went on. The title of the book is "Built to Lead: 7 Management Rewards Principles for Becoming a Top 10% Manager." And rewards is an acronym. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. I said top 10% manager. I've actually become, in my career, a top 1% manager in 3 separate unrelated industries. So if people are saying, well, he did that in retail, that doesn't apply, sorry. But yes, it does. The principles are the principles are the principles. They apply universally with what I teach in my book.
Well, and I, you know, as I was scanning through the book, I didn't read the whole book. It's a beautiful book, by the way. It feels real good. And the
Thank
plaque
you.
Is a beautiful plaque as well. I almost feel like I really appreciate that. But, you know, in the book, there's a story about Adam in there, a young man. And, you know, those key characteristics, responsibility, character, and integrity. I mean, talk about those a little bit, would you please?
Yeah, Adam personifies that. He was actually we met. He was dating my oldest daughter. Is how I came to meet Adam, and I was impressed by the young man. And you know, we were growing. We've always been growing pretty fast, so we're growing. I said, Adam, we're getting ready to hire some people, and he had 2 jobs at the time. 3 jobs, actually. Take that back. And while he was in high school, and that's the way he reminded me of myself.
Right.
You know, I mean, he wasn't always off goofing off. He worked like I did. And that impressed me. And I really liked the kid. And he came to work for me. And over the period of years, he's been with me 17 plus years now. Hmm. He has progressed up into the company. And as we've grown, because he was so dependable and reliable and trustworthy, And he is what, in the book I described the story of Robert E. Lee when he had Stonewall Jackson with him. And Stonewall Jackson was shot in a battle by friendly fire, sadly from North Carolina troops. As he crossed back across the line, he was shot, and he had to have his left arm amputated in the Civil War there. And I remember when Robert E. Lee was asked about it, he said, Thomas, talking about Stonewall Jackson, Thomas has lost his left arm, and I have lost my right. And Adam Tart is my right arm, and he is someone who I give my checkbook to and have for many years because I know he honors it and cherishes it and protects it just like if it was his own. And that's you have to have people you can trust and believe in, and that loyalty and that trust goes both ways. I proved to him that I was loyal to him, that I trusted him, and he reciprocated and did the same for me. And he's like an adopted son for me. And matter of fact, he's going to be in my will pretty soon. So, yeah, that says a lot, right?
Well, that's wild. Yeah. Hey, did he? Well, how's your daughter feel about all this?
Oh yeah, she married another guy, and he's working with us. He's working with us too. My daughter's been like one of my best recruiters down through the years.
That's awesome.
We actually had five different guys that dated or worked for me, but I've kept the best two.
Yeah.
You know, one's my COO and one is my production manager. So that's pretty cool.
That's great, David. That's really good. And that speaks volumes for yourself as well as those young men are not so young anymore, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, that you guys can see past all that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, seriously, some people
yeah.
would just run away and hide and that would be the end of it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, and you know, like in leadership, and there's a difference, and maybe you can clear this up. You know, and we've read lots of things about it. The difference really between leadership and management, and what's your take on, or do you believe there is really a difference, or are we just mincing words?
No, there is definitely a difference. A manager is just someone who says, do this, do that. A leader compels you and draws you to do this and do that. They show you the vision and where they want to go, and you buy into it. That's mm-hmm. what a leader does. A manager has to use a cattle prod to get you to do what they want. Many
mm-hmm.
times. And that, you think about it, when you are drawn to doing something, nobody has to tell you to do it. But if you're there just to get a paycheck, you're going to have to be cattle prodded to do the work. But if you believe in it and it's part of your DNA and you drink the Kool-Aid, so to speak, at that company that you work at now, then nobody has to tell you to show up on time. Nobody has to tell you to stay and get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
That's period. It's just that's the litmus test, if you will, for me.
And that's, you know, David, thank you for that. That's this is my own experience and my own opinion, I guess. But, you know, a lot of speakers, a lot of authors, success, personal development people, you know, they give you the recipe, so to speak. They don't really talk about what's going on at home, you know, how are they living, you know, and that's almost what we're touching on, the power of attraction almost, that influence, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Sure.
Well, and that's huge.
For me,
that's huge.
Without question. One of the things that we do, and this is what I think has been the biggest contributor to our company culture, if you will, and it is truly world-class. I read a book about more than a decade ago now by Dr. Tony Zeiss, who is the president of Central Piedmont Community College in Charlotte, North Carolina. And that may not seem like a big deal, but quite frankly, it's the largest community college network in the nation. And he's an immensely sharp individual. And I'm happy and proud to call him a friend and mentor now. And I actually went up and spent some time with him about it when I was writing my book. And he advised me on doing various things, and I learned a lot from him, and I still do. Very sharp man. And I read a book by him while I was traveling. And by the way, I read 3 to 4 hours every day. And, you know, I only work on my company now. I don't work in it at all. You know, I'm only in the office probably 5 to 7 hours a week, and that's just to build my people. I don't answer the phone. I don't engrave. I don't do customer service. I don't do any of that. You know, I just work on my people, sharpening my people, as Zig Ziglar says. You don't build the company, you build your people, and your people build the company. But I read that book by Dr. Tony Zeiss, and It was called The 12 Essential Rules for Becoming Indispensable. And I read it, and I said, holy cow, this is an awesome book. I need to share this with my 11 employees. So I ordered another 11 copies of the book, and I called a meeting in our break room. And I said, guys, I got a book here I want us to read. I'm going to order pizza. Everybody's going to come in here on Wednesday. We're going to sit around, eat our pizza, and we're going to talk about this first chapter on attitude. And they looked at me like I'd lost my mind or I had five heads or something. So nobody said anything, dead silence. So I said, do you understand what I want? And they said, well, yeah. So they weren't too thrilled about the idea. That's an understatement. So, as a matter of fact, I had two of the people come see me after that and said, we're uncomfortable with that. I said, I don't care. You know, we're going to grow together as a team, and we're going to get to know each other better. And it's something I'm not going to embarrass you or anything like that. Just come in and let's do it. Trust me, okay? And they said, yes. So we came in there, and to their credit, a few weeks after we had done it, a couple of weeks, they came in and told me, oh, this was something we envisioned much worse. This is great. So what we did was we met the first time, and the first chapter, as I said, was on attitude. Nobody said anything. So I went into telling them some of my story of those 3.5 years and those 7 jobs. And some of them didn't know that story. And I remember telling them that I was several times that I was miserable. My attitude was affected. And you know how I thought, I told you if I hadn't had a wife and 3 kids, I probably would have killed myself. Mm-hmm. I was that miserable. And so we talked about it. I remember several of them that, you know, right there in the group, they just said, Dave, I had no idea that you'd gone through all that. So there was an empathy for me. And because I opened up with them, they opened up with me. And they opened up with everyone there. So over the period of 10 years, that book club idea, and I talk about it in my book, how to do it, depending on the size of the company or department that you're in, how to handle it and not be able to miss taking care of your business in the process. But that book club that I started, it's made me millions of dollars, Todd. That's not an exaggeration by any stretch. And it's made my people immensely successful, and it's making them enjoy their job. And to give you an idea, we just, about a year ago, we read Dale Carnegie's book. Remember I told you my dad gave that to me when I was 14 mm-hmm. years old. Well, we read that, and at the time we had 30-some employees. And I remember I had 4 of my employees come to me or send me an email after we had finished that book, and they said, David, that book saved my marriage. Mm-hmm. One young lady was separated from her husband, and she told me, she said, I realized when I read that book that I am the problem, not my husband. And she apologized. They're back together, and they were about to get divorced. So that book club, my friend, saved some marriages and changed some lives. I mean, why is that important? Well, if you've got employees that are going through divorce, they're going to be distracted. They're going to be short-tempered. They're not going to be part of the company culture. They only think about their problems and the aggravation of dealing with lawyers and all that kind of mess. Well, if you make sure your people – now, by the way, we're doing Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University. I bought that course. It's usually for churches. I bought it for my people, and that's what we're doing. It's the second time we've gone through it, by the way. Company's grown so much, we wanted to do it again.
Yeah.
So now we're teaching people how to manage their money. If people are getting creditor calls at work on their cell phones or on the office phone or whatever, they are all of a sudden distracted. They're anxious. They bite the head off of a client or something. You can't have that. So that's why I focus on building the people in book club and not my business. We build the business in other means and other ways within the company, in training and possibly reading another book. But book club is only about building my people.
You know, David, thank you so much, and thanks for sharing that. If Charlie Tremendous Jones is listening right now, he's smiling down. He's smiling.
He'd love that.
Man,
yes,
you know?
He would.
He just loves books, you know, just like Tracy, just loves to read books. And you know what he always said, you know, you'll be the same in 5 years you all today, except for
five
two
years.
Things. People you meet and
people
the books, you,
meet,
you,
books
read.
You read.
You know, and you
exactly
probably,
right.
in that great example there, and even with those marriages and the money, it's almost immeasurable, really, the power of that
yep.
positivity. You don't even know, really, until maybe down the road someone will realize, you know, the impact that spending that time together as a team and reading that information. It's just a great thing.
Oh, yeah.
Did I read correctly in the book somewhere where you even offered to pay them for that hour for a minute?
No, I didn't offer. I do it. I pay them to be in the room an hour a week.
What are your
people that are going, you're insane. No. I'm planting seeds. Think about it. And I say this in my book, but you don't go to the fireplace and say, give me heat and then I'll give you wood later. And you don't go to the field and say, give me crops and then I'll give you seeds later. First things first. You know, I have to show my people that they matter to me and that, you know, they're important to me. I show them that they are significant to me. And I show them that they matter. And the loyalty comes back to me in spades.
Well, and again, this might be a little presumptuous on my part, David. And thank you so much so far for your story. That, I mean, it sounds to me like the powers of example, you growing up, that imprinting, faith-based household, you know, you probably, and help me with this, this is personal, you go to the well. I mean, you have a, you have, you're kind of right-sized, I imagine, and you know where the glory goes, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I thank the Lord every day for all the blessings that I, you know, as Dave Ramsey says, you know, I'm blessed so much more than I deserve. And there's no question about that. But the beautiful thing about it is, and being a preacher's son, you know, I've been able to help pastors. I've actually buried two preachers whose family, I shouldn't say this, but anyway,
easy.
You know, I just started, I forgot I'm on the radio. But this is, it's true. You know, sometimes pastors, they're not in the business for money. If they are, they're not going to, you know, that's not something they're going to be mounting any treasure up in heaven, so to speak. But you know, sometimes a lot of them, they just live very, very modest lives, and they don't really have anything to leave other than a legacy of a love for God. And I had the privilege of burying a few preachers. And part of my assets, if you will, a portion, if you will, of my estate, and is going to be to help preachers who are retired, and to be able to help them in their latter years, and that's near and dear to me because, you know, my mom and dad, they never had much, you know, and I've got some of my dearest friends are pastors today. And I love them, and I know they're not in it for the money. And God gives me the power and the means to do so. I'm going to try to help make their latter years very nice.
Nice, David. Very good. Thank you for that. We appreciate that, and I'm sure they do too. Mm-hmm. And you kind of checked yourself up there. I don't know what was going on, but it was beautiful. It was like a pump.
Yeah, I don't normally
say that on the radio. Yeah, that's good.
I've not said that on any interviews that I've done, and I've done about 140, maybe 150 interviews now. And that is not something that I really put out there. But, I mean, your radio program is a little different. You know, I know, you know, Charlie Tremendous Jones. You know, my wife and I, when I spoke at Lancaster Bible College, you know, there in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and Tracy, I told you I took Tracy and Gloria out for dinner that night. You know, I gave a check to the library there, which is in Charlie and Gloria's name, in memorial for them. And you know, my wife and I gave a $20,000 check there to help the library because of the inspiration that Charles Tremendous Jones was in my life and my father's life. And that I want to carry on not only my father's legacy, but Charles Tremendous Jones' legacy as well.
Nice, beautiful. Hey, the website is top10manager.com. That's the number 10, correct? Top10manager.com. People can find out all about it. They can probably get it.
Yeah. Exactly. That's my book's website, and that's why I said, you know, is right now if people go to Amazon and buy my book, Built to Lead by David Long, they buy the hardback copy of the book and they send me an email at davidlong@top10manager.com and put in the subject line, please send Kindle version, and put your Amazon receipt in the body of the email. I will send you the Kindle version of my book for free because I want you to read it. I want you to have it with you, not only the hardback, but if you're out and you're going to the doctor and you got some time, maybe you can read it on your phone while you're sitting there, because I want the book to be read. That's my main thing.
Nice, David. Thank you for that. That's excellent. I wanted to ask you, I was leading into this with the faith-based question, kind of. Did you ever come into times or seasons of doubt or, you know, when you're like maybe some negative self-talks talking to you, and if not, that's super. But if so, you know, what kind of things you do to work yourself through that down through the years? Even I guess in those 3.5 years, that period, there might have been a little bit of negative self-talk going on.
I've been betrayed by some people that were very close to me. My wife and I let a young man live in our house for almost 5 or 6 months. I hired the guy sight unseen because of one of my brothers had told me about him and that he was in trouble and he got a girlfriend pregnant and various things. They ended up getting married, and my wife and I let this guy live in my house. I hired him sight unseen, and later on he betrayed me. And after I, you know, we had moved on from, that was the retail world, and he ended up copying my business with another person who was very close to me, and they both kind of stabbed me in the back. And their thinking was, we're not going after your clientele. We're going after people you don't have, but those people they were going after were people I was going after, so they were going after my clientele.
Yeah.
And this family member, remote family member, apologized to me. But the other guy that I let live in my house, they had copied my company name almost to the letter. And I asked him, my brother, he kind of repented and basically, you know, everything was fine. My family kind of beat down on him, and he, you know, it wasn't a week or two. And he goes, well, yeah, I see what you mean. I'm not going to do that. So he backed out. But the other guy wouldn't change the company name, and his name is David, too. So he was confusing my client base, and I said, change the name or I'm going to sue you. And he didn't change the name. So I ended up changing the way we marketed our programs, which, by the way, once again, divine providence, Todd, very important in my life, is that we came up with the marketing plan that I have today of sending out sample plaques with, you know, Todd Weaver's name on your company logo and everything. And, people get that, and we sell that as like 1 out of 3 people that get our sample plaques buy and become a client of ours. We have 12,000 active clients in the U.S. and Canada. You know, we've been growing so much, but that never would have happened if I had not had to be betrayed. Of what I looked at that situation and felt really sick to my stomach. I was really broken up about it. I couldn't believe it had been betrayed by two people close in my life. But the Lord gave me the innovative idea about the sample system we use today, and that idea made me millions. And by the way, it took 2 years for that guy to finally agree to change his name, and we settled the lawsuit. And I had been trying to get Cracker Barrel restaurants, and I had had no luck. Well, he had 20 of them. He knew the trainer for Cracker Barrel restaurants. And anyway, in the settlement, he gave me the 20 Cracker Barrels he had, and I turned that over to one of my salespeople, and I've probably made several million dollars in business in about the last, I guess, 20 plus years from Cracker Barrel restaurants. And of course, they're great people. I love dealing with them. My people love dealing with them, and we're very blessed. But if I had not had them do that, the Lord, in my opinion, used that to force me to think, and he gave me the innovative idea that we have today that is something that just blew our company up into the stratosphere of success and put us in the top 1% in our industry. So that wouldn't have happened if I had not been challenged to innovate.
Thanks, David. That's another great example. Really, that's a great story. It made me think Chuck Chamberlain talks about that, A New Pair of Glasses, almost like, I guess it wasn't yeah. happenstance, you know, where you see things differently and, you know, and you did what you needed to do. So, and really, thank you for sharing that so much. Well, you know, really, thank you for sharing you so much. And, you know, the Built to Lead, it's the 7 management rewards principles to becoming a top 10% manager. And the rewards is an acronym.
That's right.
And what you want to give us those, what the acronym stands for?
Sure. The first R is for recon or reconnaissance. It's almost like Jim Collins talks about, you having the right people in your bus. You assess your management team, and then after you know you've got a solid one, then you assess each person in each manager's department. And you figure out, can we fix this person? If we can't fix them, let's get rid of them and get somebody else in their place. So you're constantly sharpening your axe like Lincoln. I'm looking at a picture of Lincoln up on my wall here in my home library. You know, and he said, if I've got 6 hours to sharpen, pardon me, to cut down a tree, I'm going to spend the first 4 hours sharpening my axe. And that's what I do with my people and my team every day. Mm-hmm. And that's recon. Figure out who's on your team. The next one is education. We talked about my book club. That's the main part. But also, I'm a member of about 4 different mastermind groups. You know, one was $25,000. I'm getting ready to join a $20,000 a year one. You know, I have my own local six CEOs meet once a month. We met earlier, last week. And, you know, man, iron sharpens iron, like it says in the Bible.
Yep.
So you got to be around people that are better than yourself if you want to grow. Mm-hmm. And the next thing after education is in rewards is the W. And that's for winners emerge, because when we have book club and things like that, you get to see people become leaders within the group. They step forward. You get to see them take more of an active role. You know, we let other people lead the book club. You know, it's phenomenal to see a kid like Josh Straw, the most introverted employee we have in the company, who said one time, he said, "I would like to do book club." And my COO told me when he told me that, I said, "Josh Straw?" And I said, "Wow, I got to be there for that one." So I told him, "Don't you dare let him do it till I get back." So I went in, and Josh was standing up there holding the book, shaking in his hand. But, man, he did a great job, and he has come out of his shell so much, and he's just becoming such a valuable member of our team, and I'm so proud of him. But that's what winners emerge is. The next one is A, and that's attitude. My father used to say, "Son, your attitude is like when you look through a piece of glass. If it's clear and it looks great, everything on the other side of it is great. But if you drop it in the mud, you pick it up and you look through it, everything's muddy and cloudy." And that's your attitude. If you don't have the right attitude, everything you perceive that happens to you in your life is bad if you have a bad attitude. "Why are you picking on me, Todd?" Stuff like that. You know,
yeah.
"What did I do? What are you on my case for all the time?" That kind of thing. So that's attitude. The next one is recognition, the second R in rewards. And, of course, that's what our business, that's what we do. You know,
right.
65%, according to Gallup organization, 65% of employees said they had received absolutely no recognition from their manager in the last year. And that is a tragedy. If you want to know why America is losing so many jobs overseas, it's not just the money, my friends. It is the fact that there is no loyalty between, if you want to call it, labor and management.
Mm-hmm.
They are not on the same team, not on the same page anymore. So that has to come from you first. You need to recognize your people. You know, you find things that they're doing right, and you point it out and let people know specifically what it is you recognize. And I'm not going to say, "Todd, you're doing a great job," and walk away. I say, "Todd, you did a phenomenal job of getting that report to me on Tuesday. I wasn't expecting that thing till Friday, and you know that. I want you to know I appreciate you getting that to me early. It gives me more time to prepare. Thank you, Todd." That is specifics, and that's what's powerful. General junk is of no value at all. "Oh, you're awesome, Todd." No, you're not. You got to tell you why you're awesome. So that's recognition, and that's what our company does, and that's what I love doing. Anyway, the next one after recognition is D in rewards, and that is duplication. And I developed what I call my Shark's Teeth Leadership Development Program. In a shark's mouth, and I live here at the ocean in Wilmington, North Carolina, but a shark's mouth, as you know, they have teeth in the front, but behind every tooth is a row of teeth that are laid down. And when one of the front teeth pop out, another tooth pops right up in its place. And that's why we develop leaders behind leaders. Every one of my team, my management team, my leadership team, has to be able to tell me at any given time when I ask. I could say, "Todd, who in your department, God forbid something happens to you, Todd, but who in your department do you believe, or even in another department, do you believe should have to take your place if something happens to you?" And because my people know I'm loyal to them, they have no concerns with telling me who the next person would be, because they know I trust them and I build them and I honor them, and they know I'm not looking to replace them. The company is growing so much that we have to have leaders. So if you don't have those teeth ready to pop up into place, into roles as they open up, you will be like the car that has a flat tire. All four tires have to pull over while you fix one, and you're not going anywhere. So you got to be prepared, and you have to be. It's like I always tell people, and I read this, forgot where, years ago, is that if opportunity comes your way, if preparation hasn't been there first and you're not ready for opportunity, you're passing like two ships in the night. You don't see each other. You've got to be prepared when your ship comes in, your opportunity comes, and that's the duplication part. And success, the final one, success is not the money. I've been immensely blessed You know, I'm sitting in a 6,500 square foot house, paid for. I don't owe a dime on it. I've got a beach house up at Surf City, North Carolina, paid for. Don't owe a dime on that. I've got a motor coach, a 39-foot, what they call diesel pusher, because the motor's in the back. My wife and I rode Harley Davidson's cross country. We both have bikes, Wood King Classics in 05. Those are paid for. We've got a trailer to pull them in if we want to. Everything in our life is paid for. So success is not the money, Todd. When you get to a certain level, it's like another dollar. It doesn't mean deadly squat. You know, and in my book, I talk about the guy in Kentucky, the millionaire who won the largest, at the time, largest lottery. And I remember the guy had 100 employees in his company. He was a millionaire already. He won that money. It's like $314 million. And he ended up, he was harassed by people so much, he started not going to work anymore. His company started falling apart. His wife, they ended up fighting all the time. People were suing him. Former employees sued him. Current employees sued him. Friends sued him. Family members hated him because he didn't give enough money when they felt he should have. His daughter didn't talk with him. His wife and him got basically separated, ended up getting divorced years later. But the apple of his eye, Todd, was his granddaughter. And she was working a little menial job while she was in high school. And he said, you quit your job. You don't need to do that. He bought her four cars. You know, and he gave her like $2,000 a week spending money. A long story short, she ended up ODing on drugs. And after all that was said and done, ABC News did a profile on the guy. And I remember the guy specifically saying, Todd, the worst thing that ever happened to me was having that winning ticket for that lottery. Now, most people out there, they're always daydreaming about what they would do if they won the lottery. It will destroy you. If it destroys a man who knew how to manage money, it will destroy you. People that you think are your friends and family will start hounding you and whining to you about every little problem because they want you to fix it. And if you don't give them enough money, they'll hate you anyway. So don't think that having a lot of money is going to make you successful. It's not. Money is an amplifier. If you're a sorry, good-for-nothing person, money's going to make you more of a sorry, good-for-nothing person. If you're a generous person who cares about others, it's going to make you more generous and have more opportunities to take care of people. Mm-hmm. That, to me, my friend, is what success really is leaving a legacy. And in my book, there's a picture of a little wooden chest that my employees gave me three Christmases ago. And inside there, they all wrote out, just about every one of them did it by hand. A few of them typed it out. But most of them wrote out by hand what I had meant to their lives. And they gave me that in, you know, all of their handwritten notes in that treasure chest. At the time, I think we had like 25, 30 employees. And I can't get through two or three of them without tearing up because, mm-hmm. man, that is powerful. And that, my friend, is what success is. That's the legacy, is impacting other people's lives, like Charles Tremendous Jones did, like my father did, like Dale Carnegie did. People talk about them long after they leave this planet. And that's what I want. I want to impact lives and create a legacy that others want to emulate. That's success.
Well, David, you certainly impacted lives tonight, or at least you impacted mine, I can tell you that. It's been
a real joy.
I
appreciate
You gave us a heck of a lot here in an hour's time. You know, a lot of wisdom, a lot of your experience you shared. You bore some of your soul with us. And, I mean, we just really appreciate your story, you taking the time, telling it, sharing it with us. We love the book, Built to Lead. That's Built to Lead by David Long. Get over to the website, top10manager.com. I believe you can get a free chapter over there. They can contact you there
can,
as well.
Right.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Very good. David, it's been a real joy, man. Thank you so much for coming over to Tremendous Life Radio.
My privilege, buddy. Thank you, Todd, for having me.
Absolutely. Have a great day. Thanks.
Thank you.
There you have it, Mr. David Long. Great, great guest. A real wise man. A great story. The book is Built to Lead. You can get it at all the outlets. His website is Top 10. That's the number 10. Top10manager.com. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We couldn't do it without all our listeners. We certainly couldn't do it without all the guests we have on. Get over to the website, TremendousLifeRadio.com. You can listen to all the shows. All the recorded archive shows are there as well. You can contact us. share us around, like us, tell us what we're doing good. I guess you can tell us what we're doing not so good. We'll take a look at all those things. It's really been a joy. You can get on over to iTunes, too. Just search Tremendous Life Radio. Thanks again. Until next time, make it a great day.